Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this is the first talk of the 2009 Rains Retreat. And hopefully that every one of you are all settled into your accommodation and ready to make use of the Rains Retreat for its proper purpose. So it's not just another Rains Retreat. We have this tradition of putting aside most of the other duties, most of the work, and for the senior monks to protect you so that you don't have to do very much at all, which means that you have a lot of time for personal practice. We spend the whole 9 months in between Rains Retreats making sure that everything is nicely settled for you, good huts, comfortable walking meditation paths, heaters in some of the huts, lots of support. And as many people who visit from other parts of the world say that this is a very good monastery. You do have seclusion, you do have your own accommodation in other hut places. You just don't even have your own hut in the Western world. And if you do, that you still have lots of duties to perform. And as many things happen. In this monastery, maybe a few things happen and we take that at the front. Like the car leading in the front to take all the flies on the windscreen so the people who are coming behind just going to have a nice easy ride can slipstream. So it's a beautiful opportunity. So please remind yourself of that and to see if one can encourage some aspirations for this Rains Retreat. The subject I wanted to talk about this evening was one I very rarely cover, because it's what I consider a dangerous subject if one takes it the wrong way, and it's the four Iddhipadas. And so the four roads to success, they sometimes call it, the four roads to power. And sometimes that people can mistake that as just a encouragement of one's will and doing things very forcefully in order to achieve some sort of goal. And one of the reasons I very rarely talk about the Iddhipada, those four roads to success, is because they can very easily just encourage a sense of self from where your will comes from. And because it's coming from the wrong place, it's coming from a sense of me attaining things, me getting things, that can create a huge amount of suffering. It goes against the path. However, the Iddhipadas were taught by the Buddha, and they have a part in this path. And sometimes, because of my reticence of encouraging personal will, sometimes I avoid it. But for the beginning of a retreat, it might be worthwhile to make some aspirations of what you want to do for this retreat. If the aspirations which are noble, which are not just stupid aspirations to get enlightened by the first fortnight so you can rest for the rest of the time, but, you know, reasonable aspirations which are within your ability or at least worthwhile striving for. Even if you don't reach them, just striving for them, and I'm just going to talk about striving in a few moments, aiming for them, aspiring for them, just will take you deeper into the meditation you have before. It was one of those reflections which I had to consider before I started even mentioning the word jhana. As many of you know, in the history of the Wat Pa Pong tradition, I was, I think, the first monk of our, especially the Western tradition, started talking about jhanas. And one of the reasons was that many monks just don't mention that word, is because as soon as you mention them and start describing them and stressing their importance on the path, immediately you encourage sort of craving and desire for these states. And in a person who does not know the way their mind works, that craving and desire will be counterproductive, will just make them stressed, make them tense, so they can't even get close to the jhanas. They can't even get peaceful when they're craving so much. So this is one of the reasons why that you have to be very careful when you talk about something like the iddhipada, that it doesn't actually create this sort of craving, this desire, which creates a stress. And if you achieve something, creates a sort of sense of ego and the sense of it's my attainment. So the iddhipadas, we'd set aspirations, but they're all aspirations to let go. They're goals of emptiness. They're striving to stop. They are encouraging one to sort of just remain still rather than always moving on to the next goal, always moving on to the next mountain, the next peak to conquer. It's a different type of striving. It's a striving which is informed by a right understanding of what this goal is. If we understand Nibbana as cessation, how do you get to cessation except by stopping? And how do you get to stopping except by being still? It gets quite clear just how this samadhi and these jhanas and Nibbana have a connection, are inherently sort of part of each other, in the sense that the jhana is the path and Nibbana is the goal. By stilling the mind, cessation sometimes happens. And you understand just what's going on. So, in order to aspire for stillness, for letting go, for stopping, sometimes you do need to make that aspiration clear in your mind. So at the beginning of a meditation, you can make that aspiration. In the next 45 minutes, or hour and a half, or however long you sit meditation for, to aspire to let go of past and future. Aspire to let go of this crazy thinking mind. Aspire to be with the breath. Aspire to be with every breath from beginning to end. To aspire to calm that breath down. And I wouldn't go any further than the aspirations. Because that craving and desire which comes up when you have these natural aspirations, which are good aspirations, is not dangerous at the beginning of your path of meditation. But the deeper you get, the more subtle the mind, and the more sort of dangerous these things are. So I would encourage you to stop those aspirations at the beautiful, delightful breath. And don't aspire for anything past that point. If you really are wise and you know what you're doing, then you can maybe aspire just to be more still. But when you don't know what you're really doing, that too can be pretty dangerous stuff. It can agitate the mind and take you out of stillness. But making those aspirations at the beginning is very useful. As it is, just making some goals at the beginning of a retreat. Beginning of a retreat, it's fine, make those goals. Towards the middle of the end, let go of those goals. Same at the beginning of one's meditation. And those goals, now when you have what they call Chanda Samadhi, and it's always fascinating why they put Samadhi with these these four iddhipadas, Chanda Samadhi, Virya Samadhi, Chitta Samadhi, Vimamsa Samadhi. What was it? Padana Sankara, something or other. With each one of these, that Samadhi, you know, I call it stillness. In the sense of the iddhipadas, it means keeping that aspiration going. In other words, it's having a goal and keeping that goal, sort of being single-minded in the sense that we have in the English language, of having a goal and being stubborn until you get to that place. That single-mindedness, which is, you know, the English word, is a very, very good explanation of, you know, these iddhipadas, especially the chanda. The chanda is, you know, your aspiration. Give it a nice word, the aspiration, you know, to actually too become still. And if you have such aspirations, good aspirations, then you stick with them. If they're good aspirations, the sort of aspirations you can be continue with, then you'll find that those aspirations will actually help. sort of get somewhere in the meditation, to get more still, to get more peaceful, to get less agitation, less thinking, and just more beauty in the path. So we could put the beautiful aspirations, so we stick to it. Now the way to make aspirations is something which I mentioned as a simile in that book, Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond, which I often teach during retreats, and I've often told you during your personal interviews. It's the simile of the taxi driver. And the simile is that if you're in a taxi, and rather you order a taxi to take you to the airport, and you tell the taxi driver as you leave, you know, just in front of the kitchen here, I want to get to the airport, you know, the international, not the domestic, I want to go down the Tonkin Highway, I don't want to sort of turn left at Thomas Road, I want to get on the Tonkin Highway in Kelmscott, and please, you know, can you sort of keep to the speed limit, but not underneath the speed limit, because I'm in a hurry, and please don't drive too fast, and please don't talk too much while you're driving, because I want to just be calm and peaceful. Don't put on your radio, don't smoke, and please, sort of, if there's anybody who wants to come in on the way, let them in, because I'm a Buddhist, we're supposed to be compassionate, and please don't honk your horn, because that will spoil my samadhi. And please make sure that, you know, when you're at the red lights, you don't go through the yellow lights, you stop beforehand. And if you do, put on the brakes, not too hard, because, you know, I'm a sensitive mic and I don't want to sort of hurt my body. And please make sure that when you sort of don't overtake the big trucks, you know, because I'm not in that much of a hurry, because I want to be sort of get there alive, because I've seen these taxi drivers, the way they overtake and can be very, very dangerous. Don't cross the white lines. And hopefully you've got enough petrol, because I don't want to sort of waste time sort of going to petrol stations. And when you get to the airport, please park over here and don't park over there. No, I think I made the point. Sort of, if you go like that, the taxi driver throws you out before you get to the gate. Because any taxi driver says, look, I know how to drive, that's my job. You just tell me where you want to go and let me do the driving. And that's a lovely simile, because I noticed that's how I used to meditate. Sometimes you meditate, you go, come on, watch the breath. Now come on, do the present moment awareness first of all. And should I be doing sort of silence? No, back to present moment awareness. Maybe I should do a mantra with a present moment awareness. Maybe just do a mantra just for the first few minutes, and then I'll go on to present moment awareness. And then maybe how many minutes have gone anyway? So whatever you're doing like that, shut up, for goodness sake. With Chanda Samadhi, you set the goal, and then you quiet and allow the mind to do the work. It's a very beautiful thing to watch this. It's very similar to putting an arrow in your bow and aiming. That's like Chanda Samadhi. You're aiming the mind. And then when you aim it carefully and wisely, then you let the arrow fly. And when you release the arrow, it flies along your aim. You don't have to put more effort anymore in, because the arrow is doing the work. You've done the arrow. You've initiated the process. You don't have to do any more. And this is actually just very similar to the meditation. You just tell the driver where you want to go. And then you shut up. And you're amazed at how obedient a mind becomes when you give it clear instructions. That's important. Instructions which you know it can do. And three, that you are patient enough to give the mind a chance to do it. If we keep interrupting, it's because we keep giving our mind so many different orders. It's this multi-chanda sort of samadhi. In other words, now you're sort of sending the mind in this direction, now you're interrupting it, now you're sending it somewhere else. No wonder the meditation never works. So chanda, the samadhi part of the chanda, is just that you've given the direction, you've shot the arrow, now you shut up. So you allow that intention to remain without being interfered with, so it can do its job. And one of the most important parts of meditation success is your patience, your ability to wait, no matter how long it takes, without interfering with the process. Obviously, if you've aimed wrongly, you know, you've realized that sort of the aspiration was a stupid one, then okay, re-aim. But don't keep doing that every few seconds. Wait for long periods of time. And then you find this Chana Samadhi can actually work. You're giving aspirations, you're giving instructions, you're aiming the mind. And then you're being very still. Again, the patience, the stillness, the non-interfering with the process is something which is very effective. If you don't give yourself any instructions, if you're a skillful meditator, no instructions, the mind will become still all by itself. But many of you may be not up to that standard yet. So it's good to give yourself some instructions to train the mind. So basically it knows what to do. I've been a monk, this is my 35th year, and I was meditating since I was 18. So it's over 40 years now I've been meditating. And so my mind is very well trained. It's almost like a habit. It's just what you do. So my mind doesn't need all that many instructions. It's like a dog who's been so well trained. I even just look at the leash and the dog goes and gets it. And sort of comes up to me with the leash to take it for a walk. That's what my mind is like, because I've trained it so much for such a long time. So maybe, you know, you don't need to imitate me yet, but what you can do is make an aspiration of what you want to do. And when you make that wise aspiration, and always remember to try and, part of the aspiration, remember this is all about letting go, stillness, stopping, whatever. It's always the, basically it's the intention, the goal to stop doing things, to stop this controller, this sankhara inside of you, which is always trying to make things happen. So it's really the will to stop willing. So if you can make those wise aspirations, instead of just going all the way and say will to stop willing, which is a bit too confusing for most people, stage by stage, present moment awareness, silence, watching the breath, watching the whole of the breath, aspire to watch every moment of the breath from the very beginning to the very end. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. You just do it. You shut up and allow the mind, however long it needs to take, to do that. And you find it starts to work. And with those aspirations, you know, we also have, you know, the wirya, which is the, the wirya samadhi. And that wirya is that, I mentioned, I've talked about this before, connecting that with the Pali word vira, which means a hero. It's like a heroic effort. It's not just the ordinary effort of an ordinary human being. And the word hero is usually meant somebody who goes into battle, who's willing to sacrifice everything, you know, for the battle, for the army, for the emperor, or whatever else they're fighting for. Willing even to give their whole life as a good soldier. Now that's the heroes. And any understanding of that word hero is someone who's willing to sacrifice and let go a lot. So it's not just an effort, an energy, which is coming from a sense of self and me getting things. It's like an energy to let go of things, a heroic effort. An effort to sort of go against these attachments, these hindrances, these cravings, which stop one becoming enlightened, which stop one becoming still. The heroic effort to go against the stream of craving. The heroic effort to let go of the most important attachments. The heroic effort to stop. And you know that is heroic to do that. It does take huge amounts of effort to stop and just be still. And of course, that degree of effort has to be sustained. And now it becomes quite obvious why sometimes people don't achieve these deep meditation states, because they just don't have that staying power. You have to have that heroic effort, which is, again, going to say, I don't care how long it takes, I'm not going to give up. It's worthwhile doing. So day in, day out, week in, week out, you keep on going. And one way which really helps sort of that heroic effort sustain itself is just every now and again seeing the little rewards which come when you practice according to the path. Those people who practice properly, who do put forth such things as this heroic effort to stop, to go against the defilements, to say no to all these cravings which one has, those who actually put forth the effort to stop, they do get this incredible sense of happiness, energy and freedom. Every time that I've sort of made some resolution, I'm going to stop, give up something, get up earlier, do something which is a bit more difficult, going against my own personal preferences and cravings and desires and defilements, whenever I did that, I always got this incredible boost of energy and feeling of happiness and feeling that I'm free from these defilements and stupidities which kept on imprisoning me. So every time actually you put forth that energetic effort, you do get a karmic response almost immediately, a sense of happiness, a sense of power, if you like. And it's good to be able to notice that. The mindfulness is very important, to notice that which is truly worthy of noticing. When you see the rewards which happen, that helps you sustain that type of effort because you're getting somewhere. You know what it's like if you keep on meditating or doing this or chanting that and you don't seem to get anywhere, the human being will just after a while give up. What's the point? I'm not getting anywhere. We do need some type of rewards, even though it's very true. You aren't getting anywhere. You're getting nowhere. The goal is nowhere. It's emptiness. So in that sort of sense, you know, you're going nowhere. That's the goal. However, that's not good enough for the human mind. You need to have something more tangible sort of than emptiness to keep you going. And so that we have these beautiful fruits of the path, the happiness, the joy, the sense of freedom, the insights which are exciting and interesting. Whenever you get peaceful, you feel that, yeah, this is getting somewhere now. This is what a monk is all about. Whenever you get some happiness coming up, meditating there, enjoying yourself, say, wow, yeah, this is it. This is, I'm on the path. This is what monks are supposed to be doing. And they've been doing this since the time of the Buddha. Whenever you get these great insights into the nature of impermanence or cessation or suffering or get nibbida, or you get any other of these things on the path, you think, wow, yeah, this is what is described, you know, in all the books and what Ajahn Brahm talks about. Yeah, it's happening. The insights, actually, they give you a great sense of enthusiasm, which is also important for this path. And as you get that enthusiasm, as you recognize, you know, the results or the paychecks on the path, that helps you sustain the wirya samadhi, you know, the energy, heroic energy to keep on going and to keep on giving up, to keep listening, simplifying, throwing things away. It's hard to throw everything away. It takes a huge amount of effort and energy. Just the soldier going to battle, throwing away their life. And of course you're throwing away much more than life when you go into battle with defilements. You're throwing away your body, you're throwing away your will, you're throwing away your mind. Everything you're letting go of. And that's real heroic energy. And of course there are those times which a few of you have come across when you get into such deep meditation. You feel fear. Whenever that happens and you're getting into any stage of meditation, and I see meditators come up with fear at all stages of the meditation, even stages, you know, which I thought were just, gee, I mean, surely you can't be afraid of, you know, just being in the present moment and losing the past and the future. But for many people, because they're not used to that, because they've never had present moment awareness ever in their life, and believe me that there are such people. They've always been off in the future or the past, and being in this present moment, they're just not used to it. And whatever you're not used to, a lot of times people tense up about it and they get afraid. They get afraid of losing what we call their comfort zone, the place where they've usually lived and feel at home. So every time this fear comes up, and obviously just losing the present moment or losing your thinking, losing the body is very fearful for some people when the body starts to disappear. But you get some even more interesting things like that happen in the meditation. When you lose control, you lose your will. And sometimes that happens when people have these weird nimittas coming up. Suddenly, you're out of control. Great. Always was. Now you're seeing it totally. So don't be afraid. Have this great heroic sort of effort and energy. You're willing to lose your mind, to lose your body, to die, everything, willing to let it go. As Ajahn Chah would always comment, in those first years, he would come and ask people, have you come here to die? Whenever you came to visit him and wanted to stay in his monastery, that was his question, have you come here to die? There's a beautiful little teaching which he gave, because have you really come here to die, the body to die to your body, to die to your control of the world, just to keep the rules of the monastery, keep the rules of Vinaya, to die to all your preferences and your likes for food, your likes for this time getting up or that time going to bed. You have to just abandon everything and just do what other people did. And you were dying. But then you went deeper into death. You know, when you just died to your body. Body just vanished. Die to your will. Die to your mind. Everything just going. And that took a lot of heroic energy. And it's tough to sustain that. But when you do sustain it, you get all these incredible rewards every time. Every time that you just stand there when fear comes up to you. Even terror, you just stand and look it in the eye, as it were. You just stay still. Okay, see what's going to happen next. Got nothing to lose. There's no one in here. Please always remember your wisdom. Because you know that there's nothing in here, that you don't exist. There's not a self in there. There's not a me, not a mind. So what are you afraid of losing? Just allow everything to disappear. Be a hero. And if you have that and sustain that throughout the whole of your meditation practice, throughout the whole of your life, it's amazing what happens. Don't be afraid of waking up early and getting up and meditating. It doesn't matter sort of what time it is. You wake up in the middle of the night, just get up and meditate. You can always go to bed afterwards. This is a great monastery. Any time of the day you can go to bed. So because of that, you don't have to be afraid. If the mind is bright and it wakes up, let it meditate. If you find it's feeling really sleepy and it's not just your boredom, but it's real sort of sleepiness because your brain hasn't slept enough, then go and have another nap. So don't be afraid, don't be timid. And if you have that degree of heroic effort throughout this, I mean, it's not trying to get things and just say, I'm going to sit all night, I'm going to just bear with pain. That's not heroic effort, that's stupid effort. So please know the difference between the two. Heroic effort is letting go of things. So it is abandoning things, stopping things, going against the defilements, but not making more defilements, not coming from a sense of self, but from a coming from a sense of the self and all its possessions vanishing and fading away. And if you can sustain that type of heroic effort, then you understand that second Iddhipada. It really does lead to incredible achievements on the path. And again, you do get these achievements, not all in one big paycheck at the end when you become enlightened. You get them incrementally. At every piece of letting go, you get a beautiful sense of freedom and joy. And you really feel that you are a monk and you deserve that title. You deserve the food you give. You get. You deserve all the requisites. You deserve your hut. As you get very peaceful, very peaceful and calm in the meditation. And all these great insights start coming to you. And the chitta samadhi. Again, if I start calling that the stillness of the jitta. Now, sustaining the jitta, sustaining the consciousness, it's sometimes called, that's a hard one to interpret. But I'm just going to offer it to you, this interpretation here. It's just sustaining that knowing, that mindfulness, against this doing business. If you keep just the mind aware and sustain this mindfulness, this awareness, this knowing, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. A lot of people, maybe not you because you know how I teach, many of you have been here for years, you can probably know what I'm going to say before I say it. But many people, you have to keep emphasizing that mindfulness is not just a thing. It has so many different levels. You know, it's just a huge sort of field of trees, if you like, rather than one single tree standing alone. So mindfulness is this ability to be aware that has different powers to it, different strengths to it. And part of the path of meditation is increasing the power of that mindfulness. To sustain that mindfulness, to keep it still, the citta samadhi. And it takes effort to do that. The effort to keep still. So the effort to stop these thoughts from the past and the future sort of interfering with the process of mental development. Actually to keep the focus in this moment, to keep it still, to stop it being agitated. To learn how to do that takes a lot of trial and error and effort. But when one can sustain that mindfulness and get it stronger and stronger and stronger, just the ability to be aware becomes so incredibly powerful. And you do need that degree of powerful mindfulness, trying to see what's going on in the mind. Sometimes that people, they think, oh, I can't meditate. They just can't see what they're doing. They can't see what they're doing wrong. They can't see what they're doing right sometimes because their mindfulness is just so weak. And it's important to be able to sustain that mindfulness, to keep it still, to keep it from being weakened by this doer, by this controller, by this manager, by this complainer, by the fault-finding mind. To try and keep it free from that as long as possible, which is why at the very beginning I said with this Chanda Samadhi, it's okay to give instructions, but not too many. Otherwise you just weaken your mindfulness and the mind doesn't know what it can do because it's just blind because of weak mindfulness. So to open the eyes of the mind, to make it very clear, so it has very strong mindfulness, you have to keep that stillness there. And that's a beautiful little way of practice, no matter what you're doing. If you're eating, don't think about things. Don't worry what you're going to think next or what you're going to eat next. Don't plan your afternoon. Just keep in the moment and see if you can keep the mind as still as possible so it's with the food you're eating now. People call this mindfulness practice, but sometimes it's a stillness practice, being where you are and not going anywhere. And if you can sustain that degree of like consciousness in this moment, not doing anything, not going anywhere, it's amazing just how that consciousness just gets stronger and stronger, how your citta gets energy. And I know some people were talking about, people saying that they could get this nimitta up all day, no matter what they're doing, seeing, washing their bowl and have this big nimitta in front of them. That's possible. It's just because their citta, their mind, becomes so strong. Only because the mindfulness has become powerful. Because they haven't been doing things. Because they've been really, really still. And you don't have to just be sitting in your hut to be still. All it really means is just when you're sweeping that path, you're just right with every brush of that broom. You're just right there. Sometimes people ask me that book written by Ajahn Chah, Still Water Flowing. That's what he was talking about there. Even in activity, if you're not really doing anything, basically you're doing the minimum. I don't mean you're not putting effort into what you're doing, but you're doing it totally efficiently. So when you're swishing the broom, you're not thinking, you're just doing it without wondering about all these other things. You're keeping it very simple. Very to the point, not wasting energy. And if you can do things like that, you are still. You just sweeping with your arms. And sometimes, if you know how to do this, sometimes you're just there, and just the body's doing the sweeping, and you're just doing the watching. You are still, and just the body's just moving. And for those of you who have those experiences, they're beautiful experiences. They're weird, but they're fun. You're just, whatever you're doing, you may be walking, meditating, you're not doing the walking anymore. You're just there, totally still, just watching this body go up and down the path. And you're not doing it at all. It does it by itself. So that's what we really mean when you really get strong mindfulness. That's what happens. And with that type of strong mindfulness, it means the meditation does become more easy to do. Very often the monks who find it difficult to meditate, it's because the mindfulness hasn't been empowered yet. So basically you're going blind. But as the mindfulness increases in power by this stillness, by this citta samadhi, after a while just you can mindfulness sees and you get all these insights, you understand how to meditate. You don't need a teacher, you can see for yourself. You can see just the way that things agitate you and what stillness is like. And you can actually find your way through this jungle in the beginning of meditation to come out of this beautiful, clear, free paths in deep meditation. So just something which happens. So develop the citta samadhi at all costs, this strong consciousness, this mind, this mindfulness which is really clear. It becomes so much more fun, you know, in life when you have that strong, still consciousness. So if you don't have to do much, don't do so much. That's why we have this retreat period when we can lessen all the letters and all the work and all this other stuff. So, you know, finish off the letters, finish off the stuff, and just tell your friends, I'm meditating now, bye-bye for 3 months or 2.5 months or whatever. Keep it still, keep it simple. If you can do things like that, because the mind is not doing very much, the mindfulness increases. I just recall that wonderful time when I did 6 months, just the silence and not talking to people, being alone in that hut. And that was great. The mindfulness became so acute. You know, you just get such powerful mindfulness. You could see just so much. It was amazing just how much fun you had with such strong mindfulness. You know, whatever you were doing. So it wasn't boring at all. Boring is just when you've got very dull mindfulness. When the mindfulness gets really, really strong, well, you never get bored at all. And people are quite surprised. What are you doing? I'm just sitting in my hut. Sitting and sitting, and just hour after hour after hour. Wow, that must be really uninteresting. Could you read a book? No, what do you mean reading a book? Didn't have time to read books. Just too much interesting stuff going on. So that gives you an idea of just what happens when the mind becomes really empowered with citta samadhi. And of course, with mangsa samadhi, just to sustain this inquisitive, investigative mind. In other words, don't just think you know what's going on. Just investigate. And certainly don't think, oh, I can't meditate, I'm hopeless. That's not an investigative mind. You know, you've already sort of come to some conclusion, and you, because of those fixed views which people have, they limit themselves. You just live up to your opinions of yourself, or live down to them sometimes. So give yourself a break. As I often say, that unless you've killed your mum or your dad, you're a matricide or patricide, unless you've raped a bhikkhuni or killed an arahat, then, you know, you can get jhanas and get enlightened in this lifetime. Man, woman, doesn't matter. Gay, straight, doesn't matter. University degrees, or just even got kicked out of school at grade one. And I told you that story. The guy got kicked out of grade one and just total arahat, psychic powers a lot. And they can do this. So have that investigation, which is always willing to put aside, you know, what you think you can achieve and what you can't achieve. Put that all aside. Put aside just, you know, all the past history of whether you think you're a good meditator or a bad meditator. I've noticed that, just that really can sort of stop you. I've caught myself doing that a few times. You've been meditating, and a meditation, nothing's been happening. It's, you know, you just haven't got the oomph. You think, just this is a hopeless meditation. I stop myself and say, no, that has been a hopeless meditation the last half an hour, but who knows what's going to happen in the next moment. The future is uncertain. And as soon as I stop imprisoning myself in the past, I just give myself total freedom from the past. It's amazing, just half an hour of hopeless meditation can just switch into this beautiful meditation in a moment. Because you can free yourself from the past. You don't have to be bound by that past. So it means you can, this last moment could have been a stupid one, the next moment you can be enlightened. That's just how you can let go. So the Vimamsa is willing to let go of these old ideas because you're investigating. And investigation means you have to have an open mind, put forth all those preconceptions, which are always like past conceptions, and just see this moment afresh. What's going on? This is interesting. Or one of my favorite sayings, let's just see what's happening. So don't try to do anything, just let's see what's happening. What is this moment like? What is this breath like? What is this nimitta business? You just investigate and go in. And if there is any obstacle, instead of just getting this effort coming from yourself or just trying to push yourself through, stand back. What's the problem? So it's much nicer, it's actually far more effective whenever you come across any barrier in meditation, it's used this Vimamsa, this investigation, this inquisitiveness. So you're going there and you're in the breath but you just can't go any further. Just why? Well, you know, you've got a breath and sometimes a nimitta comes up and then a breath and then a nimitta, you just don't know what's going on. Investigate. So that time you just stand back, as it were. So what's going on? When you actually stand back, you need enough mindfulness to be able to stand back. When you see what's going on, you see that, look, it's not my problem. Breath can be there, nimitta can be there, it's all okay by me, nothing to do with me. And as soon as you start letting go, as soon as you stop interfering with the process, nimittas just get stronger and stronger. And you've learned that, you've investigated, you've seen the problem. One of the nice things about Vimamsa is as soon as you've seen the problem, at least this is what happens in my meditation, as soon as you've seen the problem, it's gone. It's the old simile, Mara, I know you. And Mara has to disappear with hunched shoulders, sad, gloomy, the monk knows me. You don't have to kick Mara's butt, you just know it and it disappears. That's the power of Vimamsa. As soon as you see what the problem is, it vanishes. And you go to this next level of peace and stillness. I remember, I think it was Ajahn Mahabua gave a talk where, like, wisdom teaches samadhi. And this is what he's meaning here. Just when you actually see what's going on and that little bit of insight arises, not forced, but investigate, see, non-verbal, and it just, the problem disappears and vanishes. You get so peaceful and so still. And that means if you could sustain that inquisitive mind, and that's actually just how you run your life, then you find that you get to incredible deep states of meditation, great insights, freedom from all these defilements, and it actually works. So, the aspirations, make ones which are worthwhile, especially at the very beginning. So you don't just sit there and just, the poor mind doesn't know what to do. Give it some instructions. Imagine you got into the car and say, Buddha Rakata was the driver, and you say, okay, let's go somewhere. Buddha Rakata says, where? Say, I don't know, it doesn't matter, just we'll be here. You won't get anywhere, will you? Just sit there in front of the kitchen all day. And Buddha Rakata will be very fed up with you wasting his time. Sometimes that's what we do with our mind. Okay, close your eyes, do nothing. Poor old mind doesn't know what to do. Because you're not smart enough to know what nothing is yet. So, tell your mind, Present moment awareness, please. Just like Buddha Rakata, go to the Serpentine post office. He knows where that is. And so you get to the post office. Thank you, the present moment awareness. Now silence. Now we've got to go to Byford. He knows where Byford is. So you're silent. And okay, let's go now to Armadale Hardware. So you can see the breath. Let's tell the mind, okay, go to the breath. Now go to the beautiful breath. So the beautiful Armadale Hardware, round the back where all the interesting tools are. And then you go deeper into the nimittas. You go down to say, okay, after Armadale Hardware, now we're going to go to the Dhammaloka Buddha Center. The light of the Dharma, Dhammaloka. So nimittas. And he knows how to get to nimittas. Because your mind will know, but you've got to give some sort of instructions for your mind. Otherwise you just go around in circles and you can't get anywhere. I don't want you to have one of these range retreats where afterwards, you know, you think 3 months have gone past and my meditation was as good or as bad as it was before. What's the point? Feeling, you know, the unwholesome states are increasing and the wholesome ones are decreasing. Or even if that doesn't happen, just the unwholesome ones are the same, the wholesome ones are the same, nothing's really happened. You don't want to do that and waste your time, and waste my time, and waste all these donors' time. You want to get somewhere, so give yourself some instructions. That's a Chanda Samadhi, but just give the instructions and lay off and give your driver a chance to do the job. Have some heroic effort. And don't be just, as I keep on saying, a namby-pamby cream puff monk. Just try the different things and see what happens. You know, those of you who haven't fasted, you know, try fasting, see what it's like, and meditate all day instead. Try staying up at night. You know, just for the fun of it. See what happens. But don't go overboard. And when you do things like that, you're messing around, having a bit of fun, trying new things. And you find actually that sometimes you realize you didn't need to go to sleep so much. You didn't need to eat so much. You try new things out. You're having this hero, you're willing to let go of everything for the sake of the Dhamma. And especially, you can actually just sit there and just let go of everything. And abandon that energy of being able to let go, to stop, to give up. And of course, the strengthening your mindfulness throughout this retreat. Try and do a little less. Be more efficient. And just allow your... And I not just mean like physically. It's a waste of time if you're just sitting in your hut thinking or reading books or just having projects. See if you can keep your mind still. Sure, you get a bit dull at first. But have that bit of confidence. The dullness soon disappears if you keep still. And the mindfulness gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And then you're breezing along, having a great time, really mindful, alert, seeing amazing insights, enjoying just your food or the kangaroos or the forest. Everything is bright and clear. You meditate, you can see the breath so easily, just no problem anymore. You think, wow, why was meditation hard? Maybe it wasn't hard because you didn't have enough mindfulness yet. Mindfulness was weak, it was tired. So that's your Chitta Samadhi and the Vimamsa. Investigate, understand. And just have an inquisitive mind. Don't just say Ajahn Brahm said or the Buddha said or whatever, whoever said. Just inquire, find out, get inside things. And especially whenever you get problems in the meditation. Just stand back and look. And if your mindfulness is half strong, you'll be able to see the problem and get that much deeper. And I'm saying this because I wish all of you, my aspiration is to teach until my throat gets sore so that each one of you can just bliss out in meditation. You can taste that peace which the Buddha tasted. So you really are real good meditation monks. And you can just have this beautiful happiness and peace. So that you realize it's possible. And you can do it. And you can get these incredible deep states of stillness and peace and bliss. Really get into it. And just see if you can get these jhanas and get some stage of enlightenment. Why not? 3 months, make that your aspiration. Okay, so that's the talk tonight. Right aspirations.
Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho Sangha.